This is Thrace Relations, a podcast about Spartacus, the television series on Starz Channel. Hello, I'm Em.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Paul.
Welcome back to Thrace Relations. This is episode 1, season Vengeance. This episode is called a... Wait.
You gotta be a little bit more excited about it than this. This is the season.
This is the season of Vengeance.
I can do the robot.
Sit on my face.
Spartacus.
I had sex with your
Welcome back to Thrace Relations. This is episode 1 of Vengeance. This episode is titled Fugitivus, which I think is pretty obvious why it's called that, but if we want to speculate as to why it's called Fugitivus, we can go ahead and do so right now.
I've got a few theories. I'll just toss a few out there.
Any first impressions, anything you want to say? You know, you want to talk about how you felt about the new Spartacus?
It took a quarter of the episode for me to get kind of used to it. I was like, in my head thinking, this isn't going to work for me. You know, it really was. I was like, what the fuck? But by the end, I felt like he kind of pulled it together. And I think with everybody else's interaction with him, he's got his own style, but I think it'll work. It's like getting a new doctor in Doctor Who. You know, I need a little more hook. They did a good job by the end of the episode. I didn't even think about it.
That's good.
Yeah, it didn't take you very long at all. I thought it was actually going to take you longer because it took us on first watch, I think, maybe 3 episodes to where we were totally
3 to 5. Definitely by 5 we were there. Well,
by 5. If you don't.
5 is an awesome episode.
Yeah, 5 is really good. But
I think it was the Doctor Who training that helped.
Yeah, it does help because you get used to a different person in the same role kind of thing. But I think what he brings to the table as Spartacus is just as worthy as what Andy Whitfield did, you know, and I think they honor it, but they don't, it's hard to say it without.
Well, it's
emotional.
Like when they got the new wizard in Potter, you know, the Dumbledore, they changed his style a little bit, but, you know, like you said, they do the original actors some nods, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they kind of, that person has to own that role in his or her own way, but they, you know, it's only fitting that they kind of do that, give nods to the person who was doing it before them to say, hey, listen, I'm not going to change this around. I'm not going to be, you know, it's not like they got...
It's not like they rebooted it.
Yeah, it's not like Spartacus 2.0, you know. So it's a woman or something like that, you know. It's an Asian guy. And they're just, it's just completely
it's just so
different.
Obvious.
Yeah.
It's Ben Kingsley. As an Asian woman being Spartacus.
Dead guys, this really isn't working for me.
Are you wearing Xena's outfit? It's all right. But it was a good episode, though. I actually enjoyed it. I really wasn't expecting to like it, but I thought it was great. It filled in all the gaps I was, you know, already wondering of who's doing what. What are they doing now? I think they could have. You think Spartacus would have learned his lesson after the first time he got caught and maybe run, but they explained why he didn't. So,
you know. True. I like how it opens up the opening part because it has, you know, in the it's explaining it in the scroll at the bottom. It would have been cool if someone ever does a spoof on it. They should do it in the Star Wars crawl. The House of Bodiatus has fallen.
There hasn't been enough of that in other, like, pop culture media at all. Like,
what? Define enough. I mean,
we could use more.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're right. The Star Wars motif on spoofs of other media has been done to death, but it just made me think of that is all. Yeah. Maybe somebody shouldn't do that. Maybe nobody should ever do that, but it just kind of, in my head, I was reading it as a Star Wars crawl. So Spartacus is running. Well, you can.
Yes. Okay. So recap time. So you already mentioned how it starts out. We have images featuring some new people like Sepius and text explaining what has happened since the end of the first season. we see that in the weeks after the massacre at the Ludus, Spartacus and company have been terrorizing Capua. According to the text, I don't think it's really proper to say terrorizing. Why do I have terrorizing?
Well, they say terrorizing.
Yeah, because it says it. You have it down there because it says it on the show.
Yeah, because they're...
I think, doesn't it?
Well, Chris's I guess that would... them have been. They've just gone in and fucking slaughtering people to get information.
Yeah.
And another thing I have to say, too, at the very beginning of this, you know how they're fighting all these Romans? All they take is their swords. Why not take some armor, too? Right?
Mm-hmm.
They're
this still is on fighting. The table now. Let's
they're still that. Fighting in their undies. You know, it's like, why not take some of the armor that they're using?
They didn't?
No.
Spartacus told Agron and everybody to take something of value. Take anything of value.
Mm-hmm.
So normally in a situation like this, you would assume that to be weapons. So it's a valid point. Why didn't they take armor?
Well, maybe the armor is inhibiting.
That's possible, too. And, you know,
when they fight in the arena, they've got armor on.
Not that kind of armor, though, right?
Oh, similar. It can't be that. I mean, these guys are pretty well trained. Maybe it just draws too much attention if they're walking through the streets with the armor on.
That's true, because if they're trying to be a little bit stealthy.
And they're chink.
Yeah, they got to blend
like,
in.
Hey, that guy kind of looks like a Roman legionnaire, you know. But
it would still be worth money, too, though. So I don't know. But I'm not living in the sewers of a city because I'm a runaway slave, too. So
yeah,
there could be other reasons. Maybe just to keep that bit of these guys are badasses because they're fighting guys that are in armor and they're not, you know.
Seems like it would be smart to take armor. I mean, it probably would have other uses other than armor, even just because of what it's made out of. But I do know that they are formidable because of their gladiator training, so they're successful a lot of the time. So I don't know if that type of armor would impede their gladiator fighting style.
I think we might have hit on it just in the fact that if you're trying to be stealth-like or if you're trying to move quickly from place to place, armor's going to slow you down, make you stand out. It makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But yeah.
I mean, yeah.
They should have ran in the first place.
Yeah, why are they still, like, close to Capua?
Because Spartacus is like Jim Jones. He just starts collecting motherfuckers to listen to him. No, go. Whatever.
Who's Jim Jones?
He, I think it was the late 70s. He had a cult in South America.
They're the ones who had to drink the Kool-Aid.
He had everybody drink Kool-Aid. That's where that came from.
Is that far ago?
Yes.
Or that long ago?
I think it was 70s or 80s. I know I was too young to remember, but I've read a lot about it.
Hmm.
They killed like a senator that went to go visit him. And then finally he had everybody get underneath his tent. Women, children, even himself, they all just drank Kool-Aid and died. So I was just, David Koresh, would that be...
I'm just going to go on record here. Spartacus is way cooler than any of these people.
I know. Well, it's just interesting that they just didn't run, because that's what I was expecting when this started, that they would be up in the mountains or somewhere safe. I mean, he might as well have been having sex by a fire out in the middle of a field next to the city.
And we all know how that turned out.
Mm-hmm. But they did it right. They set up the rest of the season, I think. Now, I haven't seen it. I think everybody needs to remember I'm watching it for the first time as we go. So it was, I think it's a good setup. It makes sense at the end.
I think it's kind of told through the exposition of this, of the rest of the episode. But I think that Spartacus dwells in Capua, even though safety is obvious outside of its walls, because he's trying to draw out Glaber. He doesn't know about the political machinations that are going on that are going to drive Glaber to go back there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he can put 2 + 2 together and figure out that, like, he's shamed him by being loose, you know, and he's killing all these people and terrorizing the city. So they're going to send that person to go get him. And that's who he wants to get.
Yeah, this is not the first slave revolt, so he's probably, you know, there's been others, you know, prior to that, and probably saw how it affected the politicians and at least the history of it. I know there was one that was notable before, but none of them got to the level that Spartacus will. Also in the credits, we have a young noble that was introduced, Sepius. It's kind of like, I thought, like, Sepius, who does he look like? Will Wheaton, that's what he looks like. Okay, so anyway. So now we're past finally the credits, and and we've got these mercenaries that Sepius has hired out to hunt down the rebels, and they are now chasing down Spartacus. The image is blurry at first, and you do not see Spartacus's face right away. It's in fact, like, you see him running from behind, and he looks so much like Andy Whitfield. Like, his physique from behind looked a lot like Andy Whitfield to me. And then as they draw closer to Spartacus, he stops and turns to face them with his sword pointed at them.
It's a pretty badass move, too.
Yeah, it's an iconic looking image.
And it's the first time you get to see Liam McIntyre, you know, so it's like a here I am.
They showed him in the images that were going on behind the credits.
Oh, I didn't even know.
The opening.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. But I mean, this is the first time you see him as a, you know, because you've got the shots of the blurry shots when he's running towards the camera.
Parts of his body.
Yeah. And then you get to see his boobs.
Yeah.
You know, bulging up and down. For lack of a better term, pectoral muscles.
His boobs fighting gravity as he runs.
Yeah. But the look on his face is kind of like a statement of intent. You know, and we were speculating that because the Medicus was not going to be in this season, spoiler alert, that we weren't going to have as much comedy to play off of. It's obviously already been proven wrong.
I saw the Medicus in the sewers. I'm going to rewatch it at home, and I'm going to find him. I'm almost positive I saw him. He had the vinegar stick.
His woman was there.
You play Where's Waldo with the Medicus?
His girl was there.
Yeah. Where's the Medicus?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, when Liam McIntyre turns and looks, and he has that look on his face, and, you know, he has the swords out and stuff, it's kind of like a, like I said, a statement of intent for the episode and for the season.
Yeah. It's his first big shot. You know how Andy Whitfield, you know what his name was?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He had a lot of those big scenes, even at the beginning, like when he threw the spear in the first season. It was like his first, you know, crown.
Yeah.
His
good
first
point.
Big, I mean, it's pretty awesome shot with the horse rearing up. So it's his first, you know, good scene.
So as one of the horsemen rides by, he cuts Spartacus on the upper back. And, well, then Spartacus turns and kills him. And then the rest of the rebels ambush. And some really just awesome shots, like where the horse rears up and the horse is completely off the ground, like the hind legs even getting some air. And Spartacus is also off the ground and they're like facing each other. It was badass. Camera, I know they used some sort of special dolly for the camera where they get those long panning shots. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's called, but it's just so, so fun to watch. And we see that Agron's still very angry.
Yeah, he just kind of bounds out from behind a rock and kills him. Well, takes down a Roman and then starts smashing his head on a big, you know, just bam, bam, bam. We'll one of the other guys is like, Agron, call that the Olympian.
It was a curve by
That's her Olympian. Finishing move. Finisher. Agron wins. Olympia.
So after the fighting has stopped, Spartacus tells the men to quickly gather supplies so they can leave. He says to take whatever's valuable off the dead. He's actually ripping the shirt off of one of the dead mercenaries, and Agron asks if he's going to leave his cock to the sun. And I know I've heard that before, and that means something.
Is it?
I think it's a disrespect.
It would be awful to be dead and have your junk just hanging out for the flies.
Yeah. I it seems familiar. It seems like it there's a sense of familiarity about it that I can't pinpoint it though or place it. Yeah.
But if it was me, I know I'd rather be covered up than have everything hanging out.
Yeah, it does indicate some sort of disrespect. Like you can't just kill somebody and let the crows eat them. You got to kill them and then leave their cock exposed to the sun.
It would be shocking to kind of like come up on a camp and like
they're all dead with their cocks
to the sun. What the fuck happened? That's a party gone wrong.
Isn't yeah, it? Yeah. That army was led by General Creamer.
All right, everybody. Pull them out.
The fighting hasn't even begun yet. That's not the point.
Come on.
All right.
So he's not apparently leaving the cock out to the sun. He's actually leaving a message for an old friend.
I wish they had shown it.
Yeah, like what he said.
They show everything else. They didn't show that. You know, I was kind of disappointed, but not.
Yeah, it would have been cool if it said like Glabber and there was like a swastika carved into his forehead too.
Or a cog, you know, like a crude stick figure drawing of a dude fucking another dude.
Or he just wrote, he took a knife and he just wrote, "Dear Glabber, God, you suck.
You suck."
An hour, we'll be halfway through this recap.
Oh, God. Okay, so back in Rome, Glaber, who's now a praetor, and a man named Marcus are speaking of Rome's pressing matters of war within Hispania, where Pompey is actually fighting. They talk about him quite a bit. And they are interrupted by Senator Albinius and a man named Barinius, who carry news of the deaths of Cepheus's men. One of them had Glaber's name carved into his chest, and this info is given to Glaber. And then Barinius leaves to go see Casutius. I think you remember who he is? He's the he's the guy that had Diona buck Rascos.
The guy that likes
to let his tongue hang out. And then before he, and also before Barinius leaves, he's dropped some obvious overtures toward Alithia, much to Glaber's dismay and Albinius's delight.
The endless maneuvering.
Mm-hmm.
She married the wrong man.
He married the wrong father-in-law.
Wrong son.
Spartacus is going after the wrong person. He should be going after Alithia. But...
Whoa. Let's put the blame yeah. where it's supposed to be here now. She didn't do anything wrong. She's the victim in all of this. Poor girl.
She started it all.
No. Her man made the wrong decision.
She's the one that manipulated him into going against Mithridates.
He was still directly. The general.
Look. Paul has gone 6 podcasts without Alithia. Just let him have this.
Ah, thank you. She's the victim. She's been bullied into all of this. She didn't want to kill that woman. She just wanted to get laid.
You're going to start the Alithia Foundation?
Yeah. If it wasn't for people picking on her, she's a victim.
Yeah, they had one of her dresses on that auction.
That's creepy. I'm not going that creepy with it. I show up here wearing it.
I said something hey like that. Yeah, he's going to wear it.
With the red wig.
Well, explain what you bought. I think it's fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. This is actually a good time to tell it because it's in the scene. All those death masks that are hanging behind Glaber in this scene, I got 3 of them through the VIP auction.
It's fantastic. Are you going to hang them up?
I'm actually going to have them put into a shadow box and then hang them up.
Glass them out.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have Verinius dropping overtures about Alithia, and he leaves. And then Albinius explains to Glaber that he is being sent back to Capua to end the rebellion.
That's how I say it, too, Capua. Because that's how Theocles said it.
It's like Crixus said Nevia, and then he says Navia. And he also says Glaber. Or no, he said Glauber.
Glauber.
Glaber. Claudius fucking Glaber. All right. Yeah,
basically, Glaber is being told by his father-in-law that he needs to go clean up this fucking mess he created.
Yeah.
Because he brought that savage to Rome in the first place.
And
his daughter. He brings up his daughter being trapped in that house.
He doesn't know about Licinia because that's the whole reason why Glaber's in this position in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But how did everybody find out about the patronage? Because everybody it was announced to died. Other than Alithia and her little clutch of guards,
she probably brought it up to
the patronage was known before that night because
Bodiatus announced it. Remember, because the magistrate there didn't know.
She ended up telling her husband what was going on, and he probably brought it up like, "Why is my daughter still down there?" Well, we're gonna give him patronage because of fucking blah blah blah. Yeah,
Glaber knew he was gonna have to do that. He probably told other people in the process of getting everybody to go to Bodiatus's estate.
Yeah.
You can't keep secrets, even back then before the internet.
Poor Alithia just getting trapped deeper and deeper.
So, Albinius explains that if Glaber isn't the one who fixes this problem, then he will lose all the chance of rising into the Senate. So he's threatening them with an ultimatum. So get your ass to Capua, Glaber. So now we're at the rebels' hideout in the cisterns. The former slaves are busy training and cleaning. Mira is washing clothes, and she sees Spartacus and company return. Spartacus announces that 8 more Romans are dead, and the rebel followers cheer in response. He gives the stolen swords to another rebel to disperse to the men for training. Mira definitely has the look of love for him.
Oh, yeah.
And then Aurelia, still in bitch mode, she's just all like, "We need food, not weapons."
her rank in the Rebel Army is bitch. That's it.
She's a C-3PO of the group.
Yeah. I was thinking this whole setup was a lot like Hoth, really, you know, because all the Rebels are all in one place. And sorry, I had to do it.
Do it.
Dwelling.
Yeah. They're just waiting for the Empire to attack.
I'm surprised not more people are bitching because they're in the fucking sewers, for Christ's sake. You know, there's got to be a group of them that are like, why the fuck are we still hanging around here?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm surprised she's the only one that's like, but then again, when everybody around you who's taking care of you is a fucking gladiator, who's going to go?
Well, if you're a slave, you know, who's branded as a fugitive, what are you going to do on your own if you're just a house slave?
Exactly.
You're probably still better off when they realize it.
Oh, yeah. We've got protection one way
probably
or another.
Probably still even eat better.
Yeah.
Maybe. Some of them.
Some semblance of freedom, I guess.
Yeah.
And you know some slaves would still rather be back in the house.
Probably, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Spartacus tries to explain that the men they killed had no food on them, and the only they took what they could that was of value. Raskos and the other Gaul rebels enter, and they come in with some grub, but they are not sharing.
Damn Gauls.
They're a bunch of fucktards. And Spartacus congratulates them for a good haul and then tells them to divide the meat amongst the rebels. Raskos becomes angry, stating that they are the ones to earn the meat and that most of the rebels do nothing but lie around all day.
It's like Survivor Capua.
Things become tense and swords start to come out of, sheaths.
Well, Spartacus puts the bitch.
He says, "I'm not asking.
You know, I can jump that far."
Yeah, you've seen this. You've seen me.
Somebody drop me a shield. I'm coming. And he does. He like pulls the food out. I'm like, all right, fine.
Yeah, and after a few moments, Raskos gives in. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Is there like chicken legs and stuff, like BBQ chicken
legs? Turkey legs, almost. They're good size.
Yeah.
Snacking on. They had a lot of food. They really did. Those bags of food, there's like six of them. We're going to go pig out.
Yeah.
Sorry, y'all are starving.
Maybe that's why you're lying around a lot, because you're starving, but I don't know. So after the food is divided, Mira attends to Spartacus's wound from the battle. She talks about how short-sighted Raskos is, and Spartacus tries to reassure her that at least everybody will not go to bed hungry. And she asks, and what about tomorrow? And Spartacus says that he will simply go and kill more Romans. Mira states that she does not feel the price of Spartacus' life would be worthy of that, and that a better move would be to move into the east, where the mountains are located, where there's plentiful food and not so much Romans. So before Spartacus can give an answer, Crixus interrupts, saying, "Spartacus!"
Spartacus.
He has heard that Spartacus wants to command his men, and Spartacus assures Crixus that he does not have command of his men and that he would have made the same call if he were present as well. Crixus agrees.
He offers him a cup of wine, too, kind of as a friendship gesture.
Yeah, he wasn't actually really like confrontational. It was just more like, I heard you want to command my men.
Yeah.
You can command my
Raskos told on him. Spartacus was mean to us when you weren't here.
He snitched out quick.
Yeah.
He made me.
Do you know what he said to us? Do you know what he made us do?
I had food for you, but
just as a bear.
So
it's funny too because Crixus like closes the curtain on his men. He gets like a cup of wine. All right, let's talk. Like right in their face. Like I'm in first class now. You guys go to the coach.
Yeah.
I'll be right there.
Leadership time.
Talk amongst yourselves. Where's our wine? You know they left all bitching.
On the the other side of that curtain is just a painted hand.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all talking, we can still hear you. Fine. We're leaving.
So Crixus was in town, something that Spartacus has told him not to do because of the risk.
Well, yeah, he's like the champion of Capua. You know somebody, recognize
him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a cloak over my head, okay?
Ridiculous. Crixus assures him that he was only seen by the slaver Marcellus. Remember Pock-faced man?
Oh, yeah. That's who we went to go see.
The cunt peddler? Isn't that what Raskos called him? Uh-huh. He's out seeing the cunt peddler.
funny nickname.
Well, Crixus killed the cunt peddler, and he got the name of Trebius from him, who is known to frequent a brothel. We're about to get to that part.
Oh, fuck.
And apparently Navy was handed off to Trebius, who was basically in charge of selling her off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to go hunt him down. It's good to see he's still looking for her.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I didn't know if he was actually going to go look for her, if they were just going to throw her in the mix right away. I like that they're making him go through, like, kind of like, excuse me, what Spartacus did. To, you know, he had to do things to find his wife.
Yeah.
So it's kind of another bonding moment between the two.
Mm-hmm. And that's how, I mean, because they share that connection, that shared experience in a way, that's, I think, how he's able to sway Spartacus in the end.
Yeah, because who's controlling who at this point? You know what I mean? Because you want to believe that Spartacus is pulling the strings, but really it's almost like Crixus is the one that's focusing everybody on something.
I definitely think Spartacus is the leader, because he's the one who came up with all the ideas in the first place to kill them all and set them free. But he's also, he's not just the kind of leader who's like, no, I don't want to listen to what you have to say. He takes advice, so Crixus could be seen as one of his lieutenants or generals or whatever, or his right-hand man or whatever, totally, however you want to look at it. Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense.
But the relationship that's expressed in this episode is pretty much how it's going to be expressed throughout the entire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no.
It's awesome. It's a, you know, just showing that you got both men who could both potentially be very strong leaders. They have very strong convictions and they don't stand down. That's the kind of men you want running something like that. And it's better if you have more than just one who thinks like that, who acts like that. So before leaving, Spartacus asks if Crixus had seen Doctore. And Crixus responds that everything that went down at the Ludus was salt and mortal wound, is what he said. The Ludus was Animaeus' life. And
he's not going to want to see anybody who had a part in bringing it down.
He was about to run it. Mm-hmm. He was about to be his. And I think that if he had ran it, it would have been ran up, you know, up. It's like it would have been ran well and not dirty handed.
Yeah.
Even if Bodiatus wouldn't have let him, but it was still going to be his.
There would have been no Asher.
No. Probably would have been a better life for all the slaves. What you hope.
He would have had to deal with some corrupt politicians, though, that were patronizing the games, mm-hmm. and that would have probably caused some problems.
Yeah.
He probably would have been a short term when he said they would probably mm-hmm. had him killed.
Yeah.
He plays by the book too much. Get rid of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's not taking any of our bribes.
So we cut to a scene of gladiators fighting. Didn't think we'd see that again.
That's awesome.
And Animaeus is in the crowd. The fight, however, is proven to be disappointing. Crowd's not too happy.
Large helping of weak sauce with this fight. Mm-hmm. There's none of the, which I think is an irony, because all of these people who, you know, the people in the Pulvinus up there watching it, you know, they want Spartacus and his like to be dead, but they don't realize, number one, that those are the people that made these games interesting in the first place.
Yeah.
And number two, because they made the games interesting in the first place, they're that dangerous. And they're just so offhand about how they think, oh, we're going to send some more men out there and that should be fine. The last 100 didn't come back, but these next 8 will do the trick. Uh-huh. I promise. You know, so just kind of an observation. But yeah, this fight's really weak.
Well, the new magistrate, he's complaining that without good shows, the people will fall into panic. Okay, Sepia, who's also watching the fight, she's questioning whether these gladiator matches are even necessary use of resources while Spartacus roams free. The magistrate assures her that her brother Sepius is doing everything in his power to bring them to justice. Sepia then brings up the 8 men Spartacus killed that morning, something that the magistrate did not know anything about. And not long after she brings this up, her brother Sepius arrives, and she pretty much set him up. And then when questioned about his dead soldiers, Sepius assures that this changes nothing and that Spartacus will die, and his cousin Sextus, who was the magistrate mm-hmm. that Spartacus killed, will be avenged. It's a very strange sibling relationship.
Yeah, it's kind of dirty.
They're like Targaryens or Lannisters or something. It's just too close, you know. Just, I don't know.
I don't get that close when I talk to my sister.
Not at all. No. Not at all. It's, and I don't. It's not even about being that close. It's about saying what they're saying.
Yeah, you know. She can smell his breath.
Yeah.
What was the Leto and what was the sister's name?
Yes, that's what it made me
Ghanima.
Think of.
Ghanima.
Like their relationship. Yeah, their relationship in the science fiction version of the second book, Dune Messiah.
Yeah, in the Sci-Fi Channel version.
Yeah, they made it really incestuous.
Yeah, they did, and that was never. I just have to digress here and point this out. That was never the intent of Herbert.
No.
Because in Fremen culture, incest was abhorred. It was something that was completely reviled. So for them to play up that aspect of it, because in the book they get married, Leto and Ghanima get married, but there's no sexual relation because number one, they're not going to do it because of the incest thing, and number two, he's turning into the God Emperor. So it's not even, you know,
possible.
And it does remind
me. That's what it made me think of too, though. It really did.
You thought of that too?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought of that more than I thought of Jaime and Cersei. So the match ends with blood and Animaeus exits, and not without recognition. There's a man that's all like pointing at him as he gets up to leave.
He's not exactly somebody who could blend in with the crowd anyway, because he's fairly rude. He's fairly dark skinned.
He's not from.
And he was.
Doesn't look like he's from there.
No. And he was a champion in his own right.
And it's the way he's a professional man. You know what I mean? And he holds himself the way he carries himself. You're going to be noticed when you're like that. He's not one of the revelers out there showing their boobs and going, ah.
Which there weren't any in the crowd. So that's how I knew the matches sucked.
Yeah. Because you didn't see
nobody
any
was fucked up. The redneck tit, man. That's what I was calling him.
The redneck tit.
He's dancing on the edge of a sword he was a champion for a long time.
And these idiots follow him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is like one of the better scenes in this episode.
Mm-hmm. They try to blackmail him, like, give us your friends.
Yeah.
And we'll let you go.
But he gives them every opportunity, though. They they corner him. And he says, I have no coin for you or something like that.
He's, I have nothing of value.
And nothing of value. And they say, we just want words.
Yeah. He's on the draw, Joe.
Yeah. He says, I am absent words as well. You know, when somebody tells you that,
just back off.
That's nature's way of saying, just.
Well, and the guy knew who he was, so you figured he would have put two and two together and been like, we got to really be careful. They should have had their swords drawn already and up on them.
Yeah.
Instead of just like all nonchalant, I'm like, hey, I just drank half a case of Busch Light. You're going to tell me what I need to know.
We're just going to peacefully walk together to the place I want to take you.
Yeah. Well, he basically tells him, he says, there's a bounty on your head for, you know, raising hand against your Domina. But if you could give us Spartacus, then we could let you keep on, you know, keeping on. He's like, all right. That's it. Animaeus basically figures out at this point that these guys aren't going to just walk away. So he has to kill him. And he does it in high style. That was awesome.
He cuts that one guy from crotch to neck.
And then he breaks the other dude's arm over his shoulder, and you see the bone come up at that reversed angle. Ah.
No, it was awesome. I didn't expect as much guts. I figured it was just going to be kind of like a ching, 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 you know, a couple of quick stabs. But he proved his point because that last guy's like begging.
He's a gladiator, not a ninja.
He's like, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was mistaken. You're not Badiatis's man. And he doesn't even say anything. He just... right under the chin.
Awesome.
So now we're back at the rebel hideout. Spartacus exits the sewers to find Aurelia outside looking at the moon. She explains that her son, Janus, loves the moon, and she feels closer to him knowing that they are both looking at it. When Spartacus tries to reassure her that she will see him again, she reminds Spartacus that he won't know his father, and she doubts he would remember her. Spartacus tells her that Janus would never forget her face and will be happy to see her again when the day comes. Spartacus then tells her that he is sending some men to hunt for game in the area nearby where her brother lives. He gives her coin and he tells her to take to her son and to buy passage out of the Republic. When she tries to object, he explains that Varro's last words were for him to take care of his family. And Aurelia takes the money, agrees to leave with the hunting party.
I'm giving in this scene the thumbs down.
I was happy. Thank God she was finally fucking leaving. Dirty looks, little mouse. I was like, she's finally going.
I just felt like this scene was put here because we, the viewer, just aren't going to remember who she was and what her relationship was to Spartacus through her dead husband, Varro.
It showed, too, that he was trying to kind of like tie off Because he knew that he shouldn't have been there, and he knew that he needed to get her out to keep his word. Because he was already keeping his word to Crixus. And time again, tried to help this woman.
Yeah.
And finally, he's like, here's all the money I fucking killed for. Just please go the fuck away. Just take your kid, go the fuck away, and then I can sleep in peace at night about this one small thing. And it's not too small.
Right.
But it is. She's been a fucking pain in the ass. She finally got to kill that kid that killed her husband. Spargus is giving everything he can to her. And I was happy. It's like, good. He's finally closed the chapter in this, and she's going to leave.
And she does.
Thank God.
So now in Rome.
Yeah, I'm holding back till we get to the
end. Yeah. Glauber breaks the news to his wife, Alethea, that they are going to Capua.
And the first time you see Alethea in this season,
she's
boobies.
Naked.
You see boobies. Yeah.
And you also find out she's pregnant.
Yeah, whatever.
They casually drop that information. Yeah. They don't.
Yeah, the victim finally shows up. Alethea, the victim of all this.
I was like, we haven't gotten to this.
Yeah, we're in the Rockies.
What are you talking about?
Now she's pregnant. Her husband's taking her where she doesn't want to go. She just wants away from all of this. She's in an abusive relationship.
You're going to make one of those, like, teary-eyed Sarah McLachlan ads for her with you, you know?
That's a great idea.
With the sad ass music in the background, have like a 1-800 number.
Sad face, like pictures of her.
Okay, we can stay on track. I've just stayed in my piece.
That's fine. That was worth it. Okay, Alethea pleads with her husband to fight this demand of her father's, but he explains that there is nothing to be done and he must take care of this matter, despite it being beneath him. He also informs her that he intends to take her with him and promises they will return home to Rome before the child is born. When Alethea objects, Glauber tells her he is obligated to avenge Bodiatus because they had a patronage he was forced to agree to in order to cover up Alethea's murder of Licinia. After explaining this, he tells her to pack her things and that they will leave soon and put an end to Spartacus.
Oh yeah, Pimp Hand is strong for Glauber.
He's a Licinia cousin of Marcus Crassus.
Who started that fight?
Yeah.
She started it. She was there to get some Crixus and got Spartacus.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The Heathers got her.
What's your damage,
Olivia? Yeah, but she wanted Crixus knowing that Lucretia was...
Hey, she wanted to taste the sample, that's all. It's Lucretia's fault for telling her that she was getting it on with him. See? Victim.
Married woman behind her husband's back, mm-hmm. trying to sleep with a gladiator. Victim.
That's right. She was being invited... Come on in my house. Taste the sample. Just pick the wrong gladiator.
Yep.
So back at the rebel hideout, Agron argues with Spartacus about attacking the brothel. Agron tells Spartacus that Crixus is a fool for taking the word of a dead slaver and that it would be a trap. Spartacus tells him that he alone vowed to help Crixus to save Navia and that if Agron did not want to help, then he does not need to. He did not make any promises. He can stay behind. Agron, agrees to go anyway, says he will go with him, and also that Donar, I think is that guy's name, he says that you had me at whores, which the first time I saw the episode, I was like, what? Are they seriously...
quoting Jerry Maguire?
Yeah.
You had me at whores.
It's like...
That's a stretch, though.
Well, the second time you watch it, I didn't get that.
You could put it that way, but... It was just a typical meathead living in the sewers like whores.
Yeah.
Even though it would have been funny.
I could have said, well, when you said whores, I was on board. But you had me at whores like that specific line. But
it was good to see Spartacus kind of turn the argument around. You know, he put a little bit of spin to it. Like, you guys don't have to go. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
But Agron is very loyal.
Yes.
He is very loyal. He always goes. Yeah. He always
goes. He's loyal to Spartacus.
To Spartacus, yeah. He's not.
Really, it shows that, you know, once again, Spartacus is good to his word. He's like, I'm not going to let him go by himself. Something could happen. We're all going. We're all sticking together.
Yeah.
Three Musketeers style, but with a lot more people.
Spartacus warns the both of them to not take any unnecessary risks and to not offend the Gauls. So, we have another scene where Spartacus goes to say goodbye to Aurelia.
Hurry up already.
Okay, Pat, moving on. We'll
not leave. You.
No.
Them.
Yeah.
Them. I don't mean you. I mean...
I know. Wasn't that scene enough? Like, they had to...
Yeah. Okay. Now
in case you didn't see the last 5-minute scene, we have 3 more minutes.
Well, she's finally happy this time. Thanks for the money. I got what I want.
I'm going to say some nice things about you to my son.
Finally. Yeah, she's like, you're a good person. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, under his breath, Sparkus is going, just fucking leave already. Just go. God damn it. The age of cuts. Mm-hmm.
So after she leaves, Crixus comes up to Spartacus to remind him he doesn't need to come with him, to which Spartacus tells him he made an oath and he will keep it. With that, he follows Crixus out to attack the brothel.
Which, this is a very interesting scene.
Yeah, there's screams and moans at the brothel, among many, many other pleasures, and it's like a box of chocolate sex. There are so many kinds.
There's a strap-on, which I didn't know they had back then.
And yeah. She went deep.
Yeah, she was.
She went all the way to the frickin' balls on that.
Hey, he's enjoying it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Is that,
that
weird looking dude is pouring wine. And well, yeah, they all got to watch each other now. Remember,
Yeah.
This is Capua.
Well, Spartacus is coming. Spartacus is coming. He's like, hold on, wait. All right, you can kill this.
He likes to watch.
Okay, next up. Okay. All right, now you can kill them.
People just keep fucking until Spartacus comes in there, and then they try to defend themselves.
Oh, I haven't seen this. She's pissing on him. Hold on. Wait a minute. All right, now you can kill him.
There was pretty much every kind of depravity you could think of on in here.
Yeah, it was fucked up. Mm-hmm. It was shocking, which I didn't think they could shock me with sex anymore. But that scene was just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Even the gangbanger party that they had at the Ludus wasn't anything compared to what was going on at this place. They should have got those boards.
Yeah.
The other one. That was some crazy shit. And I wasn't expecting what happened either. I was shocked. It was a shocking scene.
Well, when the sword came through the neck.
Yeah,
this dude's jerking off, and he's just about to get there, and then that'll ruin it.
Well, you know, there was probably a couple innocents that didn't need to die, but I guess when you're going to be thorough, you might as well kill them.
Yeah, for the most part, they didn't kill women, it seemed like.
Nope, just
but
all
you
the,
did see
all
one.
The John.
Yeah, mostly Johns, yeah. But they didn't really give a shit either at the same time, because when Trebius was stabbed, like, there's the girl who stabbed him, like, crying over in the corner, and nobody cares about her at all. Like,
Crixus is all sitting down next to him going,
he's like, God, you fucking stabbed him.
Listen, you're going to tell me this, and she's all over there just traumatized.
He's like, I'll mount you now, huh? He gives him the medicus treatment. Well, the medicus did this to stop the blood.
Yeah. He thinks it's first aid. You know, I'm going to help you pull out your intestine.
Hold on 1 second. I'm here.
You're doing it wrong.
Hold on, his vinegar stick. It's clean.
If you do it with one hand like that, it'll never get infected. Watch out.
Now, did we even cover Spartacus's wound? It looked fantastic when she was cleaning it earlier.
No medicus. Mm-mm.
That would have taken 2 weeks to heal with the Ludus.
Yep.
Okay, sorry. We're back to... Was that guy pissing on that girl? Is that why she got mad?
I don't know what he was doing to her, because they come in
there. She
looked
like she had been beaten a little bit, and I don't know.
Just rough.
This wasn't...
That's the guy that I said looked like a cross between Norman Reedus and Andy Serkis when we see... the first time we see Agron and...
Yeah, that's ugly.
Yeah.
That's really ugly. Well, I mean, you know, Daryl's an all right looking guy, but you cross him with Andy Serkis, you're just asking for it.
I don't think that's that bad. I mean, that guy's ugly, but
that's what I mean. Yeah,
dang, that's mean.
It's all right.
Ugly. I didn't think he was ugly the first time I saw him.
Okay.
Well,
but so he tries to deem
Prince Valiant haircuts not
gleam.
Gleam.
Yeah, gleam.
Crixus tortures him and finds out about the next place Navia. That Navia was shipped off to.
I like how this scene goes out, because doesn't he just puke up blood and then it covers the screen?
He's like, nah.
Yeah.
My coach just sat the camera down next to him, like, getting a good shot.
That pain was so bad that he forced him to vomit.
Well, you figure he probably got some doo doo on his hands for squeezing his intestines.
Well, he squeezed his intestines and probably shot doo doo back up his like, stomach, like backwards or something.
Ugh.
Well, that definitely would make me talk.
Yeah.
Everybody's pausing. Like,
yeah. Just trying to think of you. Is this possible?
Doo-doo mouth.
Yes.
So my mom told me.
The dreaded doo-doo mouth.
If I didn't need the bathroom, it was going to come out of my mouth when I was a little kid. Like, all right, I'll go shoot. I'm sorry.
Back at the hideout, Crixus tells Spartacus what he learned from Trebius. He explains that Navia was not only sold, but was taken south and handed Dominus to Dominus on Bodiatus' command as a way to curry favor with them in the hopes it would help in his campaign for power. Spartacus urges to formulate a plan. He asks more information on the whereabouts of Navia from Crixus, whether he knows for sure which villa she is in, asking how many villas they would need to attack, the distance between them, and how strong they are. But Crixus says it is all for nothing. He does not want to wait any longer than he has to. Mocking Spartacus of his plan for caution, he says, it was a really good line. I can't remember now, but he yells it.
Was he trying to say that, like, the pot is calling the kettle black or something?
Basically.
Yeah. I don't remember the exact quote, but I understand the gist of it. He's basically saying
the tempest to calm or something.
Maybe it was the tempest and not tempest.
I think it was the tempest.
That would make more sense. Yeah.
The breeze is telling the tempest to slow down.
The tempest is telling. Yeah.
Well, it's a good point because I mean, look what Spartacus did that first few episodes of the first season just to try and get his wife back. He did it whatever he could.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's always been quick to tell other people that their plans suck. Yeah. But then, like, you know, whenever his are just horrid. Remember the episode where he's talking with Barrow? He's like, and then I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to do that. And, you know, and me and my wife forget. He's like, and you just forgot about Doctori, right? And he's like, oh, crap. Shit. Stupid. So stupid.
And in this episode, his plan's not so good. So.
Yeah. His plans get better as time goes on.
Sure.
But they usually mostly start with, like, I'm going to kill some Romans. You know? And then they kind of mature. Yeah, they mature from there.
He's lucky and he's good all rolled into one at what he does, you know?
Yeah.
Because then it was in the next scene, you know? Oh, no, we got a while to go, but still, later on, yeah, we'll talk about it later. I can go on.
I'm wondering what you're talking about. Okay.
His plan in this one, in this episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in the marketplace.
Yeah, we'll get to it because there's something that happens. I'm shocked.
He tells Spartacus that even if they plan to go south, it does not matter. Before Trebius died, he told Crixus that Rome had sent a new force of men to stop the rebellion that will arrive in the morning. And Spartacus wants to know who's leading them because he knows who's leading them.
Yeah, this is the part where he's telling. What I remember from this scene mostly is Crixus is basically telling him, saying, look, you know, if you try to kill a praetor, you know what I mean? Then it's not just going to be a couple of troops. They're going to send an army of thousands, and it's going to be a war, and we don't have an army.
What he said there was awesome too. Like Rome would burn upon itself to belch out flames. It's something like that. It was a fantastic line.
It was almost Shakespearean.
Yeah, very much. Stephen S. DeKnight wrote this episode. So in the morning, Glaber arrives with his men and marched through Capua, like we've seen him do before. I guess. And Emmaus saw this. Glaber marches his men up to the Ludus and Bodiatus' Ludus and then tells them to unload their gear and orders Marcus to make sure they are fed and rested. Patrols are sent out into the countryside. Glaber and his men are greeted by Mercado, who informs them that the citizens are panicked after the recent attack in the brothel and questions if Glaber has brought enough men for the job. While Glaber assures him he has the numbers to end a rebellion, Mercado still worries that unlike normal slaves, Spartacus and his men are trained warriors. Not wanting to be questioned about the strength of him and his men, Glaber commands to speak with the magistrate, but he is busy due to the attack at the brothel. Mercado suggests Glaber speak with Sepius, who is willing and one who will speak with him. While the two discuss Glaber speaking with Sepius, Alithia comes in through the main door. Glaber dismisses Mercado and informs him to arrange a public speaking in the marketplace the following morning, despite Mercado's doubts. Alithia becomes angry with Glaber, demanding to know why she was brought to the Ludus. Glaber explains that it offers a vantage point that allows him to see the countryside and has the space to allow him to house his men. Olivia states that she doesn't want to stay and that she has the space and that she will stay at her father's villa instead, to which Glaber becomes angry and tells her that this is their home now, and he will remain, and so will she, until Spartacus is dead. Glaber puts Olivia in charge of bringing the house to order, and she begins to do so, and doing so
She's going to spare no cost.
Yeah.
She's basically saying, if my husband wants me to live in this shithole, then it's going to cost him.
Even though that shithole, she almost got her life, you know, slaughtered. There's still dead, you know, there's still blood and shit everywhere.
Yeah, nothing's been cleaned up.
Yeah, like the liquid evaporated, so you had like this powdery red blood substance all over where the pool was, where most of the people died.
Abusive relationship. But it's fucked up, though. I mean, I wouldn't want to stay there. And I'm not hurt. I'm just saying, all in all, it's like... Yeah. And it really is a smart move on his part, because if you do look at the previous scenes, he does have a good view of, like, the countryside. Mm-hmm. It's a smart move. And
yeah,
nobody's in it but some bums, I'm sure. They got to clean some bums.
Yeah, they got to get some vagrants out.
Somewhere.
And it's also advantageous.
He's in his sauna still. What's going on? I'm just going to be in here for a while.
He squeezes the vinegar sponge over the hot rocks instead of like right
now. I've been out of water for like a week. It's torture.
Yeah, it also has the advantage of them not having to build a whole new set, because they already have the one from the last two seasons they did.
True.
You know,
I'm
not trying to be.
I wasn't expecting to ever see it again.
Yeah, yes.
You know, in my perspective, it really was a, what the fuck are they doing back here? And then, you know, he went through it. He's got more control over his wife than I thought he did. Because, like you said, in the first season, she's pulling his strings.
Well, he knows about liking you.
Mm-hmm. He's got that trump card.
That leverage.
So when her servants leave her alone, she stops and sees the mask Spartacus had wore when they had sex. And she is reminded of that night. And while she is tormented with the memory, she hears a noise from behind her and turns to see a dark shadowed figure and screams.
The medic has dropped out.
Oops. Hey, girl. What you doing here?
Bring you water. My steam bath has been dry.
I like when the guards go to get Glaver, though, and they're like, your wife is screaming, you know, what's going on? And he's like, the gods themselves would basically, what does he say? He basically just says the gods themselves would refuse to speculate on what my wife could be screaming about.
Yeah.
The gist of it.
So Mark, they rush to her screams, and they arrive to find Olivia in the corner.
Shocking.
He asks her if she lost wit, and she can't even talk, but she just points, and there's Lucretia. Did you know she was going to be in this
season?
Not
even a fucking clue. Tiny clue. I was shocked. I really was. I mean, granted, of course, I made the medicus joke right when it started, you know, but I really thought that, I mean, I thought she was imagining it also. I thought it might have been in her head, like she's got a little PTSD or something, you know. Some kind. I mean, you see a lot of men, people slaughtered, plus what she went through when she killed Lycinia, that maybe she was just having, you know, she was looking at the mask. I thought she was imagining it too. And then when he saw it, just like her, I was like, oh, okay. I was shocked. Great move on their part.
I like Olivia's reaction, though. She's like, kill it! Kill it!
Yeah, I know.
She hits Glaver.
She can't. But, her, you know, he's got a good advisor. And
yeah.
We see later that he was right. But, yeah, it was. And then I felt bad for her to have to take care of her, because she was definitely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I mean, that was... And kudos to Xena for the acting, because she played crazy really, really well. Really well. They made her look older.
She was like crazy quite a bit in Xena.
Hmm. Yeah, but he basically tells her to bathe her, you know, and make her get her cleaned up and dressed and everything, and she's bathing her, and you can tell Lithia's kind of probing her for what she remembers.
Oh,
she could tell she's a little off in the head.
A little.
And she's trying to search and feel out what she might know about this and might know about that, and then she goes, yeah, and then Lycinia, and she's all like, oh, yeah. Cousin of Marcus Crassus. If we could make introduction, that would be. And you see, like, the relief on Alethea's face. It's like, this bitch doesn't know shit anymore.
And then Lucretia's like, Alethea, why didn't you tell me? And the fear's back.
Yeah.
Like, what are you saying right now?
We got a child.
Well, she can finally get revenge on her tormentor now that she's all crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely possible. Yeah.
Yeah, because now the tables have turned from the previous season. She's going to be nursing her back to health.
Hmm. Yeah.
Now we're back at the rebel hideout. The new untrained slaves, some of whom they had saved from the brothel, are in panic at the news of the Romans. Spartacus reminds them that they all knew that this day was coming and that he has promised them all he would make Rome tremble before them. As he is telling them this, Animaeus arrives and tells them that he saw Glaber and his men enter the city and has the numbers to kill them all. He warns them that if they want to survive, they should leave while Glaber speaks in the marketplace the next morning. Spartacus asks Animaeus to join them, but he refuses as he leaves. Well, and Spartacus calls him Doctore.
I like the way they're like, what's he doing now?
Well, Crixus asks him, says, like, where are you going to go? And he says, the only place an animal with no honor can go. Where do you think he's going?
Brothels.
He's going to fuck.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. I was trying to think that myself. Like, is it, you know, I have no idea. I honestly don't.
We'll find out in the next episode.
The pits, maybe? That's what I would think. The pits. Go fight in the pits.
The thing. Mm-hmm.
Go see the trainee and the rest of the debauchers down the pits. Or is he above that still?
Well, he's an animal with no honor.
You know, Spartacus was glad that Varro's wife was gone when everybody found out about the Romans. He was like, worry about.
This is where Crixus is arguing that they're not ready to fight because they're mostly untrained house slaves.
He grabs that kid. Boy!
Yeah.
He jostles him around quite a bit.
Stop doing it, Crixus. Jeez!
And the guys are like, nah!
Look at this shit. So he's grabbing me. But yeah, it's they're trying to talk sense into Spartacus. He just doesn't want to hear it. And then finally he tells his girl after they're... Were they about to have sex or were they done? They go in for seconds. I couldn't quite tell when
That's
they were
later.
Talking that evening.
That's not yet. Oh, okay. It hasn't happened yet. So Crixus tells him to go sleep on it. And mm-hmm. then...
Hopefully when you wake, he'll change your mind.
Yeah. Reasoning will arrive. Reason will arrive. But so now we cut to a scene back at the Ludus and the servants are bathing Lucretia. And that's where... Everything with talking about Marcus Crassus that we had already mentioned and like Kenia happened, right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I got ahead
of us. So that's okay. And life blossoms in the house of Bodiatus was the last line that Lucretia says, which is
I thought finding
not
out
true.
That she was pregnant was going to jog her memory. But
so what did you think of her wound? Anything?
It seemed a bit small.
The fact that it was sewed up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was sewed up, wasn't it?
The medicus is still alive.
Mm-hmm. Now, if he was alive, then it would have been still swollen with shit coming out of it. She would have had to doo-doo rags on it. I mean, it would have been a coma. Yeah. It's almost better.
She'd still
six
be in a coma.
Yeah. 6 more months. Now, I don't know. Maybe. Well, we haven't seen Dirty Rotten Bastard yet, so maybe he did it. What's his name?
Dirty Rotten Bastard. Asher.
Asher. Yeah. I can't remember his name. He could have been the one, you know, that
conspicuously absent from this episode. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not.
No, he's not gone.
Yeah, he's not gone. I mean, he's in the credits. They show us, you know.
So maybe he's the one who sewed her up and took care of her. Because she asked, then she asked, how have you survived? How did you live?
Yeah, Alethea's not stupid. You know, she's. I mean, Lucretia might be a little bats in the belfry, but, you know, something had to go on.
Yeah.
She doesn't have an answer for it, though.
No.
She looks down and she's just like, oh, that.
I'm hurt?
Yeah.
So now we're back at the rebel hideout. Mira is lying in bed with Spartacus. She now sees that Spartacus was hoping for Glaber to arrive so he could get his revenge. Spartacus admits that this was not only what he planned, but what he prayed for. Mira asks Spartacus to leave in the morning with Crixus so that no more will die in the name of Spartacus. Mm-hmm. Spartacus's revenge. Spartacus promises that nobody else will die, and the two kiss while saying they will find Navia and make it.
He does the old tell her what she wants to hear.
Yep.
That's it.
So in the morning, the gladiators are getting ready to move out. Mira emerges alone from the hideout. Crixus asks her where Spartacus is standing on the journey south. She explains to him that last night he seemed to favor the side of caution, but when she awoke, he was gone.
It's be funny if she came out with like a hair stand straight.
Bedhead.
She's got bedhead. So Spartacus is in the marketplace.
Cool scene. Because we see the Legatus shine.
Yeah, first.
Split second.
Magistrate makes an announcement first, right? And
yeah.
Then you got Sepius coming, yeah. And then Glabber arrives and
puts on a show.
Yeah.
He's like been practicing. Sepius's reaction to Glabber. He just rolled his eyes. He's like,
yeah. Because that's God. when he's all like, Gaius Claudius Glabber.
Yeah. See, it's like it's a rare thing because you get to Sepius, even though he's an antagonistic character and you're not behind him at all, you know, he's kind of representative of what the viewer thinks of Glabber. Like, oh, God, this preening
shit. And
then
his dirty sister rubs it in his face like, I kind of like him.
Yeah, mm. I think he's hot. So there.
And then they bring out
Lucretia.
Yeah, which was fucking a cool scene. And I like the way that they had her see Spartacus through the crowd for a second. She gets all, like, scared.
He comes! He comes! He comes!
Hold on. Lithia's all like,
shut your mouth.
Pulling her hair. Oh, and then they bring in fucking stupid Varro's wife. I knew she was going to get caught. And it's smart on their part because it's another way of them going, slaves don't go free. There's no hope. That's how it made me feel. Like, second time you've been happy that it's not just because she's annoying, but you're happy that, okay, somebody's getting out.
There's hope.
And just like in the last season, they drag her ass back. Mm-hmm. And you feel bad for her. It's like, and you can see it in Spartacus' eyes, like, this is it. I didn't think he was going to do anything, but I knew once they pulled her out, he had to do something.
Yeah.
And they made her look like shit.
She did a good job when they were dragging her up there. She was all twitchy and everything.
They should have called this episode The Long Goodbye. Because it's like, how many times are you going to say, all right, I'll see you later?
Yeah, they fucked her up, man. The deep wounds in their forehead, good makeup. It was,
yeah.
They did a good job. And then the fucking fight scene breaks out. And fantastic.
Yeah, he's had enough, and he just starts to... He basically
fight him
takes on,
his
on
own.
Everybody.
Oh, man, he fucks people up.
He pretty much punked out Glabber, too.
Oh, absolutely. Because
he cuts him...
Right,
he brings his sword, he cuts him with his own sword, and then he just hammers him in the face with his forehead.
Kissed him on the cheek.
Huh? Sting! Just kind of give him a little baby slap.
Fuck his whole head up.
Yeah. What you got? What you got, Praetor boy?
Vicious and delicious. Vicious and delicious.
He starts taunting him like Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
I am the best.
And then when you think that they've got him, all his boys show up.
Crixus Spartacus!
Spartacus. It was awesome. You know, and then, of course, he gets his boy to take fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Get her safe.
Aggron takes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What a great scene, though. I wasn't expecting that to happen. It was awesome.
And yeah, and Crixus sees Lucretia.
Oh, what a great, because she gets the whole flashback. So now,
she's
you
all
know,
fuck.
Yeah, she's going to get her memories back.
She's scared. She's just like,
and he looks like enraged.
Oh, yeah.
He has to shake it off.
And he shakes it off by cutting that guy's throat wide open.
Yeah.
Catharsis.
Yep.
There you have it.
But, you know, Crixus has to convince Spartacus to retreat in order to enact proper vengeance
yes.
later on down the road.
Well, did any of their men die? It didn't look like it.
I don't think so.
Badass motherfuckers right there.
I'm not sure if any died on the other side, though. Was there any deaths?
Well, yeah, they cut that guy's neck open. I think there was a
few
minor.
Yeah, he killed a few people. Mm-hmm. He definitely doled out some injuries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he killed a few people besides that one guy that Crixus definitely killed.
Okay, so now we're back again at the cisterns. Mira is furious that Spartacus had attempted to kill Glabber, saying he acted no better than Raskos.
He got what he deserved.
Spartacus explains that he left on his own and did not design for anyone to be hurt. Yeah, he left on his own and he did not want for anyone else to be hurt, but Mira tells him that his death would have ended the rebellion. Spartacus says that as long as Glabber is alive, his wife will never be avenged, and that without her, he himself is dead. Hurtful from Mira, I think, but he's being honest.
Yep.
Crixus interrupts them and punches Spartacus, saying that he did not come to aid Spartacus in the marketplace, but to stop him. And when Spartacus accuses him of standing in the way of him and Glaber, Crixus says that he is doing the same, you know, by being coming between him and Navia. Crixus tells Spartacus that killing a praetor would only end with the Senate sending everything they have to stop them.
Yeah, that's what this, yeah.
And then Crixus goes on to say he doesn't see them becoming a real army. Agron informs Spartacus that Aurelia wants to see him.
Jesus Christ.
That's what he's thinking. He's like, oh, she's dead.
Fuck. You didn't kill her? I thought I gave pretty explicit instructions on this matter.
All you had to do was pinch your nose.
Yeah. She was almost there. Glaber did half the work for you.
She's what like did Jason you do? Voorhees. She should have been in the fucking arena.
Virilia the 13th, the final chapter.
Oh, and then she, you know, she's really fucking ungrateful.
Oh, yeah. God. Horribly ungrateful.
Yeah. Not thanks for giving me all your money. Thanks for fucking getting me out of that fucked up house. Thanks
she for getting
me to have revenge on the person that
it's biting. It's very biting.
And she's got it. Go ahead.
Well, I never forgot this scene. So when we went back and rewatched Blood and Sand and all of the little bitchy stuff she would say in Blood and Sand, it had even more impact on me. It's like, God damn, she's always ungrateful. Like into him.
She's like, she gets this little Yoda moment where she's like, come closer, you know? And then he's like, what? And she's like, fuck you. Yeah. She basically tells him, like, don't ever go near my son.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it stings, and I felt bad. It was like, man, they're fucking bringing it. And Spartacus
his eyes are all wide
up.
And full
yeah.
of, you know, tears.
And I was going to give her a compliment on her death throes. You know, she's, like, twitching, and everything seemed good. And then right when she dies, she goes all, like, wide-eyed. You know, and I laughed out loud.
I heard
like,
you.
What the fuck? I was going to give her all kinds of credit. Like, that was a really good death scene. You know, she's like, all kinds of, and then she closes her eyes and then gives him the stare. You know, it's like, yeah, somebody just kill this bitch for real. That was terrible.
You should have just put a hand over her face. Shut up now. Just shut up.
Like, God, hey. He just poked both of her eyes. Even though she's dead, he should have just fucking three stooges.
Three stooges, yet. Oh, but her hand would have come up, you know, not to block it. I still hate you. I still hate you.
I hate you. He pushes on her chest. I hate you.
So she finally expires, and then what's Spartacus's reaction to this?
He Agron actually has a reaction first, and he says, you know, the Romans are going to pay for this. We're going to go and kill them.
Yeah.
And then Spartacus says, no, actually, we're going to go help Crixus instead. And basically, this is not going to happen again. We're not going to let one of ours die again. We're going to stay together as a group. It's bad when we split up.
Well, it's the first promise that really wasn't his fault, but it's a promise that he made that was broken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though it was all her fault.
Yeah.
She should have ever gone there in the first place to become a slave. She's going up on the shelf with the Medicus doll for future reference. It's just that character is embedded.
No mouse. More Aurelia.
No, the mouse is finally gone. Mm-hmm. Good actress, though. I mean, she played the part. Good actress.
It was worth seeing her
casting.
Stab Numerius to death. That was great. But all the rest
of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, she only really was in it for one more episode after that. But, like, they just had to, I don't know if it was part of her contract or something. They just like, she was a plot device largely for this episode.
Yeah, because of her, he went with Crixus.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So she served a purpose. But.
And the deaths there might have made the episode for me. I mean, it was pretty fucking funny.
Is this the end of the episode?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, you guys remember Cinemax? Mm-hmm. And remember you used to call it Skinemax?
Yeah, Skinemax.
Okay, found this on the internet. I wrote it down. If this show had been on Cinemax or Skinemax instead of Stars, and they really played up the little softcore porn thing that they do, here's the, remember the David Letterman lists?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Top 10 rejected names for the Spartacus series. If it was going to be on Cinemax. In order 10 going
okay,
down.
10 to 1.
Yeah, we got Illicit Alithia, Beer Broads and Batty Hottis, Getting with Gannicus.
I'm in that one.
Porno in the Pulvinus. Putting Crixus in the Mixus. Barkus Bandits. The Lusty Ludus. Mounting the Medicus.
Oh, yeah.
Ding dong, it's Doctore. And number one, Super Sparty Sexy Party. All right, confession. I made these up at work today while I was bringing stuff back and forth from work.
That's fantastic,
Super
dude.
Sparty Sexy Party.
That's fucking awesome.
I thought of two or three at first, and then I was like, I got to pitch this. I'll be honest. I pitched it like I did in case they just didn't go over and it was flat. Then I could be like, yeah, those dumb internet people.
Yeah, no, those are fucking great.
Putting Christmas in the mixes.
Oh, my goodness.
I used to love those David Letterman top 10 lists.
Oh, they were awesome. He still does them, right?
I don't know, because I haven't seen a Letterman show in forever. But there was one that always cracks me up, because we have a book of them somewhere.
Dad.
Yeah,
oh, cool.
It was top 10 least popular breeds of dog. And one of them was Holocaust-denying German Shepherd.
Oh, fuck.
So there you have it.
Your That's fantastic.
Top 10 rejected titles if Spartacus would have been on Cinemax.
Thank you
and good night.
This was a No Ship Network podcast brought to you by Esoteric Studios and Axolotl Tank Productions.